everybody. Mike Malloy here. It is about 7 past the hour. I have a story for you from here in Atlanta that I just heard about today that I hesitate to... I'm serious about this. This is not a setup. I hesitate to put it over the air because it's a spirit crusher. But I'm going to do it anyway because I am your hateful, bad-mouthed liberal. But this story is so bad. I was thinking today, what is it that what group have the Republicans, the teabag bastards? They're all the same now. What group have they not attacked and tried to demonize? They're anti-immigrant. We know that. They're anti-gay. We know that. They're anti-liberal. We know that. They're anti-Democrat. Where they're anti-unions, and they're making it very clear they're anti-Muslim. I guess so far, I want to say the Jews have escaped, but that's not true, because as there have been, I think the report I saw on the news today, there's been something like 125 blatantly racist attacks, hate crimes against Muslims. In the past 12 months, there have been over 1,000 against Jews. And every single one of these attacks, every single one of these acts of violence against these groups can be traced back to a right-winger, to someone who would tell you he or she is a Republican, they believe in the Constitution, they believe in Glenn Beck, and second to Glenn Beck, they believe in the Christian God. Oh, and they believe in tax cuts and small government. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Sarah Palin is their favorite masturbatory fantasy. What is it with these people? What is it to you Republicans, you right-wingers who listen to the program? I've got to ask you. I seriously, not that I care. I only care insofar as I have to share citizenship with you in the same country. But is there anybody other than fundamentalist Christian white people? Oh, I left out blacks. They don't like black folks either. Is there anybody other than your own damn selves that you care anything about? You know, I talk about how the Democrats are a bunch of cowards all the time. They have to run to the House or Senate cloakroom and pee their pants when the Republicans threaten a filibuster. But you know what? Democrats, Republicans out in the real world, I don't care what they do, are the biggest collection of creepy cowards I've ever run across. Think about it. They're just terrified of everything. Black people, immigrants, gays, liberals, Democrats, Muslims, unions, everything. They're afraid of everything. Jews, everything. Everything is out to get them. And their real enemy is the same enemy that all these groups have, including them. They just don't know it. And that is this unbridled predatory capitalism that's destroying them. But you see, capitalism is smart. It employs people like Glenn Beck, people like Rush Limbaugh, people like Sean Hannity, and pays them enormous amounts of money to propagandize the hate, specifically to keep all the right-wingers' attention diverted. Well, the immigrants have cost me a job. No, the queers. No, the liberals. No, the Jews. No, the blacks. No, the Democrats. No, it's Muslims. No, it's unions. And they never confront the real nexus of their problems. Everything comes down to the fact that they are seen as useful idiots that are very easy to divert. Look over here. Here's a couple of dangling gays. Look over here. Here's a couple of shiny Jews. Look over here. Here's a couple of ringing Democrats. Look over here. Here's a couple of bloody Muslims. Anything. They go for anything, these cowards. You people crack me up. You really do. You right-wingers, you Republicans. I've never seen such a collection of moronism ever, anywhere. Not in literature. Not in reports of how people live in other countries. Nowhere have I ever seen anything like the fear and loathing. Jesus, I wish Hunter Thompson were allowed to write about this, although Mark Morford does a damn good job, and a few other people do well, too. But this fear and loathing that conservatives have about everything, especially other groups of people who may be just a little bit different from them. What the Republican, what the right-wingers don't understand is that in a very, in the only way that matters, and that is the essential construction, the physical construction of them, these right-wingers, they're the same as gay people, they're the same as immigrants, they're the same as liberals and Democrats and Jews and Muslims and union folks and black people. Everything's the same. You poor bastards. I would hate to be you. I really would. Here's the story that it just twists me into knots. This is from Atlanta. There's a place here called Children's Healthcare of Atlanta at Eggleston Hospital. It's well globally known. They only treat children, and they treat kids with just some of the worst imaginable diseases. A woman from Barbados brought her 7-year-old daughter here. And they have been here for 10 months. Well, the 7-year-old daughter is getting intense chemotherapy and treatment for stage 4 cancer. This is a child, 7 years old. The government of the United States has given the woman from Barbados 1 week to stay with her cancer-stricken child, and then she has to leave the country. The mother does. Now, the mother says, quote, she is so sick, and for me to have to go back to the plane to come back again, even if for 2 days, it's heart-wrenching, end quote. She told that to WSV television here. Since the child is too sick to travel, the mother can either stay in the United States illegally and jeopardize her daughter's visa or abandon her sick child. She says she filed an appeal. It was denied. The mother said, quote, I can't even go to the bathroom without her calling my name to come back by her side because of the pain and how intense it is for her. So I don't even want to think what is going to happen when I'm forced to leave. Family attorney said they might meet the requirements for a medical visa, but time is not on their side. September 2nd. Now, to you right-wing vermin, both of these people are in the country legally. They have insurance. They're paying for their own medical care. They have the proper visas and the proper passports. But when the mother applied for an extension on their visitor's visas, the child's extension was granted, and the mother was told to pack her bags and get out of this country by September 2nd. Now, son of a bitch, I cannot believe I live in a country now, and apparently I do, where this can happen. Even if at the last minute somebody helps this mother and her daughter. Even so, to put this mother and this 7-year-old child stage 4 cancer through this kind of a situation is just unbelievable. Why is this happening? Does anybody have any idea? Why is this happening? And you filthy right-wingers, like I said, the really important facts of this case to you are the fact that they have insurance, they have visas, they have passports, they came here for treatment. Broken pain, I'm broken cloud, broken treaties, broken vows.
for a liberal helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. You know, these right-wing vermin, especially the teabaggers who have taken over the Republican Party, and rendered people like Boehner and Mitch McConnell zombies. These are zombie Republicans. They're dead. And they are being animated by the Tea Party. Zombie Republicans. I want you to remember that. That's what they are. The only real Republicans are the teabaggers. That's it. And you know how they're always talking about, well, they want to return to the Constitution. Jefferson, Washington, Madison, you know, right? One of the things they want to return to desperately, even the women, is the period before women's suffrage. Today, by the way, is the 90th anniversary of the 19th Amendment being ratified in this country, which gave women the right to vote. That means there are women alive today who lived in a time in this country when women couldn't vote because they were considered stupid, hysterical, incapable of understanding political topics. That's the way it's been presented. But the truth is that reason women couldn't vote, they were half the population back then also, but they were not as easily manipulated by the capitalists. So the capitalists who were running everything, you know, Henry Ford and Carnegie and the rest of these people over the years, the mega capitalists, they did not want women to vote because they felt they couldn't control both men and women. Men they could control. This is back in the day when mostly women did not work. The men they could control the same way they control them now, with fear. If you don't do what we tell you, we'll fire you. And they could. If you try to union organize, we'll bring in people to beat the daylights out of you. They did. So keeping women off the voting rolls was extremely important. But the suffragettes, after 70 years of fighting for the right of women to vote, they finally got the 19th Amendment ratified on August 26, 1920. Where are the women today? Apparently, males in this country do not have the courage any longer, for whatever reason, because it's been beaten out of them, or anxiety pounded out of them, or whatever. But men are not leading against these capitalist pigs. The last time I saw women really active was late 60s, regarding our war crimes in Vietnam. And it finally got to the point, this is one of the reasons we don't have a draft anymore, it finally got to the point where mothers against the war, women against the war, stepped out. And once that happened, what happened? What happened in the old Soviet Union when the women, the mothers, finally took to the streets about their sons being killed in the Soviet Union's war crimes in Afghanistan? Huh? So I just wonder, you know, 90 years ago today, the amendment to allow women to vote, full citizenship, that's how brief a period of our history women have had the right to vote. We hold these truths to be a self-evident, that all men, generic, all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, except women, except African people, except Native Americans. These are all not human. By our definition in the U.S. Constitution, all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. But not women, not Native Americans of any gender, certainly not slaves or African Americans, and unless you're a free-born white landowner, you're not included in this either. So the teabaggers, this must be a very hard day for them. It really must. For the people who organize it, like the Koch brothers and Dick Armey. This must be a very difficult day because this is the 90th anniversary of women getting the right to vote. And the teabaggers will tell you in a heartbeat, including the women teabaggers, that women should stay the hell home. Because, you know, they're not political. They attend to hysteria. They're supposed to squeeze out progeny for the men, you know, and on and on and on, right? Oh, and they're supposed to be there to cook and clean, and yeah, that still happens. And iron and do the grocery shopping, raise the children. Yeah. We'll be right back. Regarding the fact that Republicans constantly try to divide and conquer, they hate everybody except white people, and mostly middle-aged white people. Well, they like white college kids, too, because they keep thinking that that will be the new crop of psychopaths like they are. But Tim in Madison has an answer. He says, I'd like to point out to all that the right wing's intent is to continue to divide the working class, the working poor, minorities, everyone else who is not a multimillionaire. In other words, about 90% or more of Americans, that's the target. This is done so we will not organize and not overthrow the corporate elites that run this country. There is no immigration reform because corporations need slave labor. And if given citizenship, they could organize for fair wages. Beck and Limbaugh want all to fear the brown people and blame all of our country's woes on the immigrants, Muslims, unions, etc. Their followers share none of these pigs' goals, as their goals are to turn a profit on their followers' ignorance by making them fear and keeping them poor and enslaved by corporations. We have to find a way now to counter these corporate-sponsored snake oil salesmen before it's too late, if it isn't too late already. And by the way, this is a Tim that sent me that website. If you didn't go to that website, I just want to ask you, with all due respect, why not? I told you what it is. It's in Madison, Wisconsin, and there's a lot of public sector jobs there that are about to be privatized. Now, when that happens, what happens to you, me, the consumer of jobs that are taken out of the public realm and privatized? Usually the quality of the work immediately goes down. I don't care what the right-wing lying bastards tell you. Oh, corporations do it better than government. That's not true. That is simply a lie. It has always been a lie. It is the essential lie put out there by the capitalists and their apologists. What happens is when these public sector jobs are privatized, the quality gets less, the quality of the workmanship, the workers are no longer responsive to the people because they have to be responsive to the corporations. Hello, there you go, economics 101. So the people lose power and the corporations gain even more power. Go to their website, for God's sake. There's a long way of saying go to Save Madison Jobs. Save Madison Jobs. Com. Please go to their website. See what they're talking about. This is only affects public sector workers in Madison, Wisconsin. But it doesn't. It affects public sector workers across the country. Check it out. SaveMadisonJobs.com. Japanese news from Japan. A senior politician who is challenging Japan's current prime minister. They seem to roll over about every 10 months on average. Prime Minister Naoto Kan is being challenged by somebody named Ichiro Ozawa. And there's an election next month for the leadership of the ruling Democratic Party of Japan. That's what they call themselves. When we defeated the Japanese, we made them adopt all sorts of terms that we use for our form of government. And no matter how phony the terms are, this one's called the Democratic Party of Japan. If Ozawa wins, he ran for this job last year and he lost because of a scandal. Japanese politicians are not terribly unlike Republicans in this country. They're liars, cheats, thieves, scandal is their middle name, all of them. They're kind of like, the Japanese politicians for the most part are kind of like Tom DeLay. That'll tell you all you need to know. Anyway, he said that Americans are simple-minded. And he confessed that he doesn't like the Brits much either. He was on a program, and according to the BBC, what he said was, I like Americans. They are somewhat monocellular. When I talk with Americans, I often wonder, though, why they are so simple-minded. I don't think Americans are very smart, but I give extremely high credit for democracy and choices by its people. Now, see, this is where this Japanese moron reveals his ignorance of our system, really. Of course Americans are simple-minded. The whole system here, the political system, to a large degree, the way the education system is funded, and the way corporate America influences the education system, and I make great distinctions here. There are teachers, there are professors who bust their asses trying to educate people in this country who are almost uneducatable. But this Japanese politician doesn't understand when he says, I give extremely high credit to them for democracy and choices. We don't have choices in this country. Come on. What is he talking about? So, yeah, Americans are simple-minded. We are kept simple-minded specifically to make sure that capitalism continues. Capitalism cannot continue. Exploitation of the working class, exploitation of artists, exploitation of science cannot continue unless there is a hammer of capitalism over everybody's head. So what this guy Ozawa, Ichiro Ozawa, doesn't understand is the way it really works in this country. Now, I frankly, when I read this, I thought to myself, well, of course he understands it works the same way in Japan. Only Japan is more hive-oriented. Hive, like a beehive. Whereas United States, we've been told that the most precious asset we have is our individuality. And yet, when you get right down to the sad fact of life in this capitalist society, who has individuality? What the hell are they talking about? Huh? What are these baggers talking about? What are these psychotic NRAers talking about?
Well, you know, I got my gun on my hip. By God, I've got individuality.
No, you don't, sucker. No, you don't. You don't have anything. You got a gun. That's what you got. Woo! Everybody's got a gun, you half-wit. That makes you an individual? No, but I'll use it. Still doesn't make you an individual, dummy.
Well, I'm a Glenn Beck follower.
Well, that just makes you psychotic. You know, this so-called specialness that Americans, we Americans, are supposed to have, that is such a joke. Japan may be a hive society, but the United States, we have become a herd society. Which would you rather be in? Which one usually winds up in the slaughterhouse? Huh? After savaging the United States, Mr. Ozawa turned his attention to the UK, where he declared, "I don't like British people." But he did express his admiration for the way the UK is thoroughly implementing democracy. Well, that's what he said about us. "I give the United States extremely high credit for democracy." I'll tell you what, Ichiro. Let me open up my house to you. You're welcome to come over here anytime you want. We'll put you up for, 3 days. I don't allow anyone to stay here longer than 3 days because I believe in that old saying that visitors and fish begin to smell in 3 days. So you come over, Ichiro. Come for 3 days. Okay, four. And I will tour you around Georgia, Atlanta, the suburbs, and I will show you that this democracy, these choices you think that we have in this country, all of this is a huge illusion that corporate/capitalist America puts out there for consumption for you poor people around the globe. I don't mean poor in terms of money. I mean you are led to believe that capitalism will bring you democracy. And that's so the capitalists can move into your country and take over, which certainly has happened in Japan. I'm getting too far afield here. This is more Michael and Roswell or Irish Dave or Prairie Two's field. So what I'll do what most talk show hosts do when they're in over their head. I'll take a break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Your hate filled liberal.
Before the hour.
So the Glenn Beck Fox Channel hate continues to metastasize in this country. Now, it was in Queens, New York. You know, had the kid who attacked the Bangladeshi cab driver with a knife yesterday. Today, a man entered a mosque in Queens, on Wednesday evening, last night, and urinated on the prayer rugs. Isn't that nice, huh?
But the good folk over at Fox News will tell you, oh, this is no sort of anti-Muslim right. or anti-Islamic activity.
These are somebody wanted
isolated,
to pee.
Kind of crazy pee. Maybe he couldn't find a bathroom.
The man who is identified as Omar Rivera. Omar Rivera. Reportedly shouted anti-Muslim epithets and called worshippers who had gathered for evening prayers terrorists. One witness told the New York Post, that makes it immediately suspect because that's a Murdoch rag. One witness told the New York Post that the man was, quote, quote, very clearly intoxicated and, quote, had a beer bottle in his hand at the time. All that might mean is he was going to smash the beer bottle and do what the white boy did with the cab driver, slice somebody. Mustafa Saduki, who was at the mosque at the time to pray, said, quote, he stuck up his middle finger and cursed at everyone. He calls us terrorists, yet he comes into our mosque and terrorizes other people. End quote. Rivera has been charged with criminal trespassing. Is that all? Faiza Ali, a New York spokesman for the Council on American Islamic Relations, said, quote, without a significant response by mainstream political leaders, this disturbing trend will only continue to grow, end quote. Well, you know, I hate to tell you this, sir, but Americans don't listen to political leaders anymore because with very few exceptions, we don't have any. And if you know, if you're an Obama fan, I'm sorry, you know, but we do not have the kind of political leadership that would squelch this kind of idiocy. And the way you squelch it is you tell the FCC to get these hate bastards off the airwaves. It's very simple. You just say, get them off. I don't care. Get them off. These guys can, you know, the Becks and the pigs that are destroying the country, let them go do shortwave radio or something. You know, get them off mainstream radio. That's all a leader in this country would have to do. Is just very quietly go to the FCC and say, get them off. Oh, but Mike, what about freedom of speech? There is no such thing in this country as unrestricted freedom of speech. The most famous example, of course, which the Supreme Court justice said, I think you are not allowed to falsely shout fire in a crowded theater, you know, because of the impending or the resulting death and destruction that would occur. And this is what Beck and the rest of these rotten son of a bitches are doing. They are falsely crying fire in a theater, I don't like the theater analogy, in a school where there are children who are then trampled to death as they try to get away from the fire. Beck, Limbaugh, all these people should be taken off the air. I mean, seriously. We live in a free society, but we do not live in a society that I don't think, well, and of course we do, but we shouldn't live in a society, should we, where people have the right. And if you're Republican, the obligation to go on the air, radio and television, and tell lies that are so grievously destructive. We shouldn't live in a society, should we, where an administration is able to lie us into an invasion of another country and then the mass murder of their people. Should we? Should we be there? Everybody knows now that Cheney and Rumsfeld and Bush and the whole cadre of war criminals lied the country into a war that's resulted in hundreds of thousands of people dying, children for generations to come that will be pained and deformed because of our weaponry. Is that okay? Everybody okay with that, huh? Is it okay to have a pig like Glenn Beck, who wants to see people killed Saturday at his messianic rally? Glenn Beck is going to attempt to, or he should anyway, part the waters at the reflecting pool in front of the Lincoln Memorial. Right? Glenn Beck is wanting. All of these right-wingers want violence. That's what they're all about. That's all they're about, is inciting violence. They should be instantly removed from the air. And if I were king of America for a day, I would have these people off the air so fast. And then I would put them on trial for inciting disorder, treason, just right down the list. And I would do so in the name of good governance and the survival of our society, which they are trying to destroy. Glenn Beck has done more damage to this country than any invader ever, ever, ever. And it's only going to get worse. And you'll see what happens on Saturday. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Demonizes gay people, every single one. This is their stock and trade. This is how a lot of them get elected, is by demonizing gay people, or Muslims, or Jews, or I don't know, pick somebody. But the latest example of this is from Wichita, Kansas. This is in the Wichita Eagle newspaper. Democratic Kansas House candidate Dan Manning said he came home from work early Saturday morning and found a death threat clipped to the outside of his apartment door. The note was created with letters cut from newspapers and other publications, and it noted that he's a candidate for the House. It had words like "will die, kill, murder, head off." It also used derogatory references to homosexuality. He immediately reported the note to Wichita police. The cops say they are checking it for fingerprints. Mr. Manning, the one who was the object of this cowardly act, said, quote, "If their point was to intimidate me, they did," end quote. But he said the intimidation dissolved over the course of about half a day. Quote, "The only thing it really accomplished was to strengthen my resolve," end quote. Manning is openly gay. He's a board member of Knights Out, a group of West Point alumni. You hear me? A group of West Point alumni. Staff and faculty who support the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender soldiers to openly serve in the military. He graduated West Point in 2004. Manning said he doesn't hide his sexual orientation. He said it's not central to his campaign. He said voters care about jobs, education, and the economy. That's true, and I think more and more Americans are looking at the whole issue of one's homosexuality or heterosexuality or bisexuality or transgendered status or whatever as what it should be, just completely superfluous, you know, unless you, if you're a woman, you meet a guy and you think he's really cool and you want to go out with him, you find out he's gay. Then you've got an interest in caring what he is, right? Or vice versa, man, lesbian, yada, yada. But how long does it take to straighten that all out? And then you can be friends, right? But there is a huge subset of sick people in this country. like the kid who slashed the cab driver, like the people who chant "God hates fags." I mean, there is a sick subset, and you know what? I hate to say this because it's really going to piss some people off, and you know I don't like to piss people off. But most of the haters, not only are they right-wing Republicans, they're also right-wing Christians. You know this as well as I do. And I'm talking about Protestants and Catholics. You know this as well as I do. I don't know why you sit there shocked when I say that. But invariably, they turn out to be right-wing Christians. Now, a lot of people who are Christians who are not right-wing Christians say, Mike, wait a second, I get these emails all the time, wait a second, you know, you're lumping us all together. Of course we have psychopaths in Christianity. And my response is always like, I appreciate your email, but when you get right down to it, in order to believe the kind of stuff that Christianity or so many religions insist you believe, you've got to be willing to be crazy. You do. You have to voluntarily be insane. And then I piss off the people who like this program but happen to be Christians. I'm sorry, guys and girls, I really am. But you give me a better way to deal with your faith, so-called, and I'll try it. Regarding getting back off the air, if I were king for a day, I said I would just tell the FCC, get rid of these bastards. Bruce writes, and the FCC is completely powerless to do anything about these right-wing thugs because the courts are 100% in the hands of the same people who pulled the leash on Beck. Nothing will be done about Beck until corporate fascism is completely in control, and then he and the other brown shirts will be rounded up. Now, this is interesting. I got this from Bruce. Also get this, completely unrelated, from Len. Len writes, how it works in this country, Mike, it's a passe, obsolete, meaningless phrase. You know, democracy, it no longer works. The wheels are off and the wreck is unstoppable. What it looks like after the smoke clears is uncertain. But the last 30 years of our decline, as the world around us woke up to the finite resources we share on Earth, the last 30 years are history. When the world stops taking our treasury bonds, Glenn Beck will look smart for selling gold. But the fury of the poor who could only afford a radio and no gold will track and attack him and kill him. Lynn in New York. You know, and Prairie 2 writes, and then he and the other brown shirts will be rounded up. Interesting. Two people from totally unrelated sources. That's usually the case. That certainly is the historical model from Germany in the 30s. You know, the brown shirts were the thugs until the night of the long knives, and then all of a sudden they weren't anymore. They all got dead. Y'all ever see the Andy Griffith movie, A Face in the Crowd? I remember seeing that when I was, a teenager. It was fascinating. I got it. You know, I got what it was about massive ego and hubris and how somebody who is plucked out of nothingness and becomes a huge media star. Yeah, they had media stars back in the 50s when that movie came out. And then their decline and eventual destruction. JP in North Carolina writes, Mike, our national wealth is being stolen, for sure. I myself feel like I've had the economic vigor wrung out of me. And I've been through this twice now. Once when IBM laid off 100,000 people in the mid-90s, and recently when my permanent temporary job with the state of North Carolina was eliminated. I feel out of ideas and stamina, to be honest. I don't think people realize that we're being strip-mined by corporations and by government. I personally feel like I've been suckered, and this is gravely depressing. Sure, I've got a couple of high-quality degrees, but it no longer matters. Sidebar, I'm watching Turner Classic Movie Cable's movie night tonight. The film is Face in the Crowd. I'm sure you've seen it, but oh my God, what a timely film. The lines and acting are very timely. I think this is a film that everyone needs to see. JP in North Carolina. Yeah, the instant image, as a matter of fact, even looks a little bit like him, only much, much uglier, is Glenn Beck in the Andy Griffith role. Oh, well. Have we got time for this one? I guess. Steve writes, I've been watching the Chilean mine accident coverage, and something continues to surprise me. Nobody seems to be contrasting the mine accident here and there. If you call the accidents at the West Virginia mine, the miners had no ability to survive beyond a few days. In Chile, by contrast, the reports are that it would take several months, and that the worst thing we hear of is essentially extreme forms of cabin fever. Well, it might be a little worse than that. The rescuers can get the miners food and clothing, and they actually have a safe place there to stay in, a sort of apartment underground, as I understand it. Was there any talk of this in West Virginia? Not that I heard of. Nobody, again, nobody that I've heard or seen, is even asking this fundamental question. How is it that these miners in Chile are going to have shelter in the mine while rescuers are digging them out? While here, massive mining was turning off carbon monoxide detectors. Steve. Well, that's certainly an excellent question, isn't it? All right, we have a break here. Oh, remember last night, last hour, where I took the whole hour to explain about the Koch brothers, most of the hour to talk about the Koch brothers, the absolute epitome of American capitalist fascism, corporatism, fascism. The Koch brothers are going to be providing free transportation to Glenn Beck's rampage at the Lincoln Memorial this weekend. Huh? How about that? And a matter of fact, David Koch of the giant Koch industry said, quote, "We've moved our annual Washington training session to correspond with Beck's rally and are offering to bus attendees to it." He also said, "We very much appreciate and support Glenn's general message that he puts forth on a daily basis." See what I'm talking about? You guys are just rolling in the emails tonight. Gordon in Oklahoma City, who you've heard me read his emails a lot, he has a website too, Gordon OKC. Gordon OKC. WordPress.com. Check it out. When I give you these websites, check them out. You know, what does it take? A couple of keystrokes? Check them out, because some of these are really groovy. Anyway, Gordon's is Gordon OKC, Oklahoma City, OKC, GordonOKC.wordpress.com. He writes, "Did you see the video of the hapless guy who was on his way to work at Ground Zero, no less, and was harassed by the angry white mob, or angry mob? I'm afraid this hatred will continue to escalate until the bloodshed exceeds that of 9/11, thanks to the usual suspects of right-wing pundits." Excuse me. "Well, the bloodshed has far exceeded that of 9/11, Gordon. I guess you mean in this country." Okay. Anyway, if you want to see that video, Gordon's got it at his website, GordonOKC.wordpress.com. Okay? Now, don't email and say, "What was that?" GordonOKC.wordpress.com. Go check it out. And Irish Dave writes, regarding the Japanese, "Mike, years ago, workers in the United States and Japan were asked what they did for a living. Typically, the American workers replied, 'auto worker.' The Japanese, rather, named the corporation they worked for, Honda, Mitsubishi, Nissan, etc. Under the longtime reign of the Japanese liberal Democrats," and by the way, they were neither, "it is pretty much a fascist state, with combines of corporations dictating policy." Irish Dave. Yeah, it is. It certainly is. And Bob in Kentucky writes, if you want to know what the future will be, just reread the history of the Crusades and the history of the French Revolution. The 2010 version of the Crusades is happening now, only the Christians aren't going to stop with just the Muslims. These new Christian Crusades will be expanded to include blacks, gay folks, Hispanics, and anyone else who is not a part of their hypocrisy. The 2010 version of the French Revolution will happen when enough people get thrown out of their homes, lose their jobs, have no unemployment comp, and are sick of millionaire congressmen who have no idea how normal people live, making decisions that do not help. I hope you're right, Bob. I hope that's when the people rise up and start the tumbrils turning. I really do. I'm just wondering, though, if or who... Not if, but who will have the strength, the physical strength, the emotional strength, the spiritual strength, because you have to be spiritual to lead a revolution. Who among us will still have that strength after being so divided, so conquered, so demonized, unless you're a middle-aged white Christian? Fundamentalists. If you're a middle-aged white Christian fundamentalist, you're okay until they come for you, too. But anyway. Oh, back to Koch. The Koch brothers, David and who's the other one? It doesn't matter. The Koch brothers, the owners of Koch Industries, the two fascists who are single-handedly trying to destroy the country and replace it with a type of corporatist fascism that would make Mussolini spin in his grave. If he could, because remember what they did to him. Remember what they did to Mussolini and his girlfriend. Woo! Lord have mercy! Americans for Prosperity, which is a major conservative political organization backed by right-wing billionaire David Koch, they had on their website that they had moved, I've said this, moved to Samuel Washington training session to correspond with Dex Rally and are offering to bus attendees to the rally. And according to Politico, the president of Americans for Prosperity, Tim Phillips, said, quote, we very much appreciate and support Glenn's general message that he puts forth on a daily basis. He consistently espouses free market views, Jesus Christ, and views that espouse what the founders thought. It's a good message, and so whatever direction he chooses to take with this day and this march, we support it. Free market views, huh, you dumb bastard Tim Phillips? Free market views, that's what Glenn Beck's talking about, huh? Oh, my God. Terry, oh, no, we got to go. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I've just got too much here. We're going to try to get your phone calls in the last hour, too, so stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. It's great to be a member of the Lucky Sperm Club. Living in the lap of lazy luxury. Yowie. You can't let me be so lucky. It's a special club for the privileged few. Not for me, not for you. It's a wonderful life. No stress, no strife. Never worry, never worry. And young warm, I wonder what great things they've done to become the fortunate one. They're the happy members of the Lucky Sperm Club. The only thing they have to do is be
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Oh, yeah, from Terry. During your show last night, you referred to Alan Simpson as a member of an Obama-created commission to study ways to secure Social Security. The fact of the matter is that Obama appointed former Senator Simpson to be co-chair of a commission that was to make recommendations on ways to reduce the national debt. And Social Security was specifically excluded. So, we have a co-chairman who went out of his way to include Social Security in its study. Shades of the Supremes with their Citizens United case, Terry. Thanks for the correction, because, you know, after we were off the air, I usually go back and take a look at whatever notes I might have had. And I saw that and I thought, wait, no. I got it completely wrong. And I appreciate the correction. Always appreciate the corrections. But, it was Simpson who said that Social Security is it was something with 310 million tits. Or a cow with 310. Yeah. What a nice guy, huh? Alan Simpson. He's one of those people. And while they're not unique, they certainly are few and far between, who no matter what he does with his face, it always looks like a sneer. Like, he's a Snidely Whiplash type, you know? Every time I've ever seen Alan Simpson, I expect to find out that he just tied some girl to a railroad track someplace, and the train is coming. And what? And he twirled, yeah, his mustache. He'd be twirling the end of his black mustache. Oh, my God. The best friends of the Bush crime family are the Saudis, the wealthy Saudis. A 50-year-old Sri Lankan woman who worked as a maid for a large wealthy family in Saudi Arabia for 5 months, was tortured by family members. And the way they did it, they hammered nails into her body. Did you? This is on the AOL news website today. I'm not laughing. This is horrible. There were pictures of the X-rays on the website. The woman who flew back to Colombo, Sri Lanka, from Riyadh on Saturday was brought to the hospital there by her concerned children. X-rays show there were 23 nails embedded in her body. Some of the nails were 2 inches long. Most of the nails were embedded in her arms and legs. She didn't even realize how many were in there. She told doctors that the Saudi family tortured her with nails and threatened her life with knives during her employment with them. The doctor said she didn't speak their language and they didn't understand her, but she kept saying, Sri Lanka, Sri Lanka, Sri Lanka, and they realized she wanted to go home, so they brought her to the airport. The Sri Lankan Bureau of Foreign Employment sent an envoy to the hospital to record her statement and plans to take action against the Saudi family who employed the woman. And they've also informed the Sri Lankan embassy in Riyadh and the Saudi embassy in Sri Lanka. Blah, blah, blah. Now, this is the sort of thing that one would expect in the United States, not in a highly civilized and very wealthy country like Saudi Arabia, where the Bush crime family maintains very, very, very close relationships. The woman said, I had to work from dawn to dusk. I hardly slept. They beat me and threatened to kill me and hide my body. They were really devils with no mercy at all. I could not understand their orders, and they were angry. And that goes on. Some of it is, you can read it at AOL if you want to. It's a little bit too graphic to put on the air. And the reason I bring it up is because, you know, the predatory capitalism, of course, is not limited here. When you combine predatory capitalism with the kind of religious insanity that wealthy Saudis, the Saudi royal family, the rest of these people practice, just like Christian fanatics here. Did you know that, where's that article I had about Pat Robertson and... the warlord, the guy that's on trial right now in The Hague. Who is it? Charles Taylor, Liberian President Charles Taylor. He is the warlord who ruled Liberia brutally for 6 years. And as reported to the Nation by Aram Roston, Taylor fueled the atrocities in neighboring Sierra Leone and profited from the so-called blood diamonds that were mined there. And Naomi Campbell, the former, or is she still a supermodel? She had to testify there. And as Aram Roston says, while Campbell may be famous and glamorous, the most prominent international figure to come into contact with President Taylor has been American Pat Robertson, the televangelist, entrepreneur, former Republican heavyweight, and one-time U.S. presidential candidate. Robertson used to mix his missionary work in Africa with efforts at developing mineral wealth. First, he financed a diamond mining venture in Zaire, and then he pushed for a gold mine in Liberia through a Cayman Islands company he owned called Freedom Gold. That's when President Charles Taylor gave Robertson's company a gold mining concession. Now, keep in mind, this is Pat Robertson. This is this filthy son of a bitch who sits on television every single day on his nest of insane people called the 700 Club. That Pat Robertson. You know, he is nothing but a hustler. He is a two-bit punk hustler. And, I don't give a damn about religion, but this guy takes Christianity and perverts it to a degree even beyond Franklin Graham. Franklin Graham, who is just insane, that's all, from too much cocaine. But this guy, Pat Robertson, who is a twisted individual beyond belief. I used to talk about years ago about what Robertson would do. He would get the government of the United States to give him a C-130, or he'd rent one or something. He would have this great big campaign to raise food and relief supplies, and he would load it into the C-130, not very much because he's a punk ass. He would load it into the C-130, fly to Zaire, and unload the stuff, get it out. And then the plane would come back loaded with gold and diamonds. this is like Glenn Beck. And this filthy Brent Bozo over at, what is it, Media Research Council calls me a hate monger. Hey, Bozo, you crazy son of a bitch, you are surrounded. You are a part of the worst cadre of filthy Nazi white people ever produced on this planet. And you're going to call me a hate monger, you scummy bastard, you. I'm sorry, I'm using real bad language tonight, and I know all my program directors, I'm sorry, guys, I'm really sorry, but when you have somebody like Pat Robertson, or somebody like Glenn Beck, what do you all want me to do? Huh? Do you want me to play nice, or do you want me to clean up? I know you want me to clean up my language. I know some of you are network-owned stations. I understand. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not using the F word. I'm not using the GD word. But they are sons of bitches. They are pigs. And I'm sorry for the language if it's upsetting people. But, I've said this a million times. If you cancel my program from your radio station, I understand. I get it. I really do. But I am not. Oh, hello, Kathy.
Ground control to Major Tom.
I cannot sit here and very calmly talk about a monster, a killer like Pat Robertson, or an instigator like Glenn Beck without going a little bit, goofy, huh? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think God wants Pat Robertson to have jewels and gold and planes full of precious minerals. Isn't that what Jesus wants? Isn't that how he's getting his reward for going over there and spreading the Christian word to all the heathens, the little dark heathen people? So he gets their diamonds because he's saving their souls.
No, he's not. What he and his filthy comrades in the United States are doing are sending emissaries to countries like Uganda, where they have the Ugandan legislature pass laws that say gay people will be beheaded. That's what this pig, filthy Satan demon. I can't say it enough. I can't say it enough. These people take a message. I don't know whether you believe Jesus even ever existed. As far as being the Son of God, oh, okay, sure. But if there was a Jesus and what some of his people reported he said or did when he walked the Middle East 2,000 years ago, Pat Robertson is as removed from that as a cockroach is removed from a Buddhist monk on top of Mount Everest. What? That didn't make any sense, did it?
Cowboy.
I'm just trying to show a lot.
Cowboy.
Oh, well. We'll be right back.
With the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Anyway, Pat Robertson. I like the way Aaron Rostin puts this at The Nation. Pat Robertson used to mix his missionary work in Africa with efforts at developing mineral wealth. The diamond mining venture in Zaire is one, and then a gold mine in Liberia. And he hid it all through a company that he owned in the Cayman Islands called Freedom Gold. I mean, how can a filthy piece of human waste like Pat Robertson present himself? Well, that's not the question. How can a filthy piece of human waste like Pat Robertson be accepted by an audience to the 700 Club as somebody who speaks the gospel of Jesus Christ? Unless you have a perverted understanding of the gospel of this man who may or may not have ever existed, but let's stipulate that he did for the sake of the Christians. How then? I mean, did Jesus, when he was walking around the Sea of Galilee, did Jesus, you know, make a side trip down to someplace in Africa and open up a diamond mine? I thought Jesus, if you read the mythology of the Christians, it was Jesus who drove the money changers out of the temple. And Pat Robertson is a money changer, only he's a money changer of the worst kind. He involves himself in exploiting the people in countries who live under dictators. How? My God, how does anybody ever believe these televangelists are anything but the hucksters and the bastards that they really are? How do you people do that? How do you Christians do that?
I think you've lost your prayer glove.
Prayer glove?
You've misplaced the special glove you're supposed to wear to touch the screen to receive the holy anointment of the blood of the Lamb from
All right. Charles Taylor, the murderous dictator of Liberia, had a contract with Robertson. A contract. Few people have ever seen the document. Aaron Rostin writes, I got it during a trip I took to Liberia in 2001 when I co-wrote a story for GQ called Pat Robertson's Gold Fever. That was when Taylor was still in power. The contract gives Pat Robertson the right to mine gold in a southern site in the country and potentially make millions of dollars. And what did Robertson do to win the mining lease? It is unclear. What is true is that the evangelist used his TV pulpit on Taylor's behalf. Robertson turned out to be a vocal supporter of Taylor in the rather obscure debate over U.S. foreign policy interests in Liberia. Taylor was a strange person to champion. He had been trained by Colonel Muammar Gaddafi after escaping a U.S. prison and was known worldwide to be a dictator presiding over one of the poorest countries in the world. The United States was pushing economic sanctions and there was U.S. arms embargo going back to 1992. A spokesman for Pat Robertson defended Taylor's rule in Liberia, not because of the gold mine, but because the televangelist worried about the safety of Christians in Liberia. Ah! Ah! Oh, my God! Ah! Sure you did, Pat! Sure you did! You know, I've said it before. I sometimes hope, in a very profound and almost religious way, that there is the hell conjured by Christians that is available for people like Jerry Falwell, who would be there now, Pat Robertson when he finally croaks, but all of these people who have taken Christianity. And I'm not talking about the Crusaders. I'm not talking about the crazy, the way Christianity developed. I'm going back to the mythology of the Christians. Their God avatar, Jesus, the rabbi, who wandered the Middle East 2,000 years ago. That's when I talk about Christianity and the way I'm talking about it now. That's what I'm referring to. I'm not referring to Christianity as it has been since the year. When did Jesus die? When he was 33? Is that when they nailed him? So to speak, 33, 34, I think it was 33. I'm talking about, so that let's call that year 33, since the whole world uses the birth of Jesus as a starting point with their calendar. Well, not the whole world. But in the year 34, that's when the lies began. That's when the distortions began. That's when the corruption began. All the way up to now, where this corrupted faith produces vermin like Pat Robertson. Or, yeah, he's just the one I'm talking about tonight, because I read this article in The Nation by Aaron Rosten about the trial of Charles Taylor, the murderous dictator, former dictator of Liberia, who is on trial. And I'm against the death penalty, but I hope this bastard, well, they don't have the death penalty at The Hague, do they? Oh, damn. Okay, lock him up for the rest of his natural life. But, you know, when they have supermodels testify against him, and then, of course, Pat Robertson will never show up. He would never show up, would he? Pat, I'm telling you, I'm here to tell you, your God sent me to tell you that your ass is going to burn for all eternity. You know how long eternity is, Pat? There's no end to it. You are going to burn while snakes, scorpions, and spiders nibble on your body forever. And every once in a while, a demon of the most foul will come over and do bad things to your body orifices. That's waiting for you, Pat. It's waiting for you. Trust me, you filthy old bastard, you. See, this is what hate radio, liberal hate radio, is really all about, huh? Give you hate radio. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Glad you stuck around. Jimmy Carter, you know, that the right wing loves to demonize. Worst president ever. You know, because he had the misfortune of preceding St. Ronald Reagan. Of course, Jimmy Carter was the only true evangelical Sunday school teaching president in modern times in this country. You would think that Jimmy Carter, back in 1976, was the epitome of what the right-wing Christians wanted. But no, because he was just a little bit... Jimmy Carter was not a liberal by any means. He was a white Southern male who had been basted in Southern evangelical Christianity and the military. But Jimmy Carter was not a racist. And one of the reasons that he was as honest and decent as he was because of Rosalynn Carter. I always forget. You know, we've met her. How do you say it? Is it Rosalynn? Rosalynn. That's right. It's Rosalynn Carter. Who, in her own right, is probably one of the best diplomats the United States ever had. You talk about a female president, Rosalynn Carter. It's too late now. Both of them are getting very, very old. But former President Jimmy Carter was expected to leave North Korea tomorrow with Aijalon Maligomez, an American who was sentenced to 8 years of hard labor for illegally entering the country. Carter went and got him, right? Carter will be leaving tomorrow, but he had been visiting Pyongyang on a private humanitarian mission to win the release of Mr. Gomez, who was sentenced in April to 8 years in North Korean prison and fined $700,000 for entering the country illegally. There also has been speculation that North Korea might try to use Jimmy Carter as a conduit to ease tensions with the United States. See, Carter, to me, Carter, and yeah, because we're all from Atlanta. Met him several times when he's had books published. I used to interview him on the air. Haven't talked to Jimmy Carter in 15 years. Last time I was at the Carter Center in Atlanta was probably 10 years ago. But he is a good and decent man. And I say that even knowing that he is an evangelical Christian and believes in talking snakes and cloud beings and all that stuff you hear me mock on this program. But aside from that, that's not the part of him that I think is appealing to people around the world and to me. Aside from all that, he is a genuine, decent, kind, loving human being. Now, his brother Billy, you remember his brother Billy? You talk about a psychopath. Billy was, and had nothing to do with religion, Billy Carter was an alcoholic, beer-drinking, crazy. He made deals with the Libyans because he was the president of the United States' brother. He set up business deals with Muammar Gaddafi back during, and what did Reagan do? And Reagan came in office shortly after. Reagan had Gaddafi's daughter murdered with a missile strike. Somebody's going to email and say, well, and his daughter's stepdaughter. Bite me. So, Billy Carter tried to set up little deals with Gaddafi, and Ronald Reagan murdered Gaddafi's kid. Interesting. And then years later, a Libyan was instrumental in blowing a jet lighter out of the sky over Lockerbie's sky. It never stops, does it? How did I get on this? I got on this because Jimmy Carter went to Korea and has secured the release of an American Carter has the ability to do this. I just wish that when he was president, Jimmy Carter would have focused more of his attention on normalizing relations with Cuba. Donna in Chicago. Oh, we're taking calls now. 877-996-2556 if you want to call in. Donna in Chicago writes, Mike, I'm going to send an email to every talk radio host with an idea. Do you remember how the King of Denmark saved Danish Jews during World War II by appearing on his balcony wearing a Star of David? His countrymen followed his lead to such an extent that the Nazis couldn't distinguish between Jews and non-Jews. I think it's time to start thinking about a protest against the hate with something extraordinary like that. I know you're not a religious man, but I would still ask you to think about this. What if there were a counter-protest to burn a Quran day with a read a Quran day? It would be great to get sympathetic churches and synagogues in New York to spearhead such an initiative. I even thought that it would be worth approaching some Islamic scholars to see if it would be sacrilegious to have all women in civic groups, churches, synagogues, anything, to wear hijabs on that day to demonstrate solidarity. I'm going to approach people here in Chicago and see what I can get started here, but I'd like to know what you think about this idea and whether it would be good to broadcast such a plan to your listeners. I've listened to your program for years, Mike, even back to your days on White Like Snow radio here in Chicago, OWLS, White Like Snow in Chicago. And blah, 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 thing, and a very complimentary thing. Thank you. Donna in Chicago, Illinois. I think that's a good idea. I really do. I have a Bible here. I have a copy of the Holy Quran. I have writings by scholars of Torah. And it's been a long time since I've picked any of this stuff up and sat down and really read through it. But I've been fascinated. I've always been fascinated by these three peoples of the book, you know, the interconnecting lines between Judaism and then its son, Christianity, and its daughter, Islam. And I don't know, it just always fascinates me how three groups of people like this can worship the same God, with the same constructs about the origins of everything, with sharing the same prophets, the same founder, I mean Abraham, right? Abraham the Jew, Abraham the Muslim, Abraham the Christian. They all claim him, so, you know. And yet, the Christians will murder both Jews and Muslims. The Muslims, under the wrong circumstances, will do the same to Christians and Jews. The Jews, brook no patience when they decide that a certain patch of desert in the Middle East is theirs, and if there are people living there, whether they're Muslim or Christian, they're going to go to make way. It just gets very, very frustrating. I digress. I think it'd be a wonderful idea, Donna, for every person in America, on the day that this little pissant down in Gainesville, Florida, is going to burn Qurans, if everybody would carry a Quran. Do you know what the chances are, though, of that happening? About the same chance as opening a ice cream franchise in Pat Robertson's hell, probably. But, Don, I think your idea is excellent. Thanks for suggesting it. We'll be right back. Someday it's going to come. Someday it's going to come. Someday. Someday. Someday.
speakers, here's the Truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Reg writes to me, reminds me, Jimmy Carter left the Southern Baptist Convention, the Southern Baptist Church, and I think that was his home church. He had a lot of problems with the Southern Baptist Convention. Was put together originally to exclude people of color. That's why it's called the Southern Baptist Convention. But Carter, in an essay in The Age magazine, wrote the following. At its most repugnant, the belief that women must be subjugated to the wishes of men excuses slavery, violence, forced prostitution, genital mutilation, and national laws that omit rape as a crime. But it also costs many millions of girls and women control over their own bodies and lives and continues to deny them fair access to education, health, employment, and influence within their own communities. A little bit further in the article, he wrote, "The truth is that male religious leaders have had and still have an option to interpret holy teachings, either to exalt or subjugate women. They have, for their own selfish ends, overwhelmingly chosen the latter. Their continuing choice provides the foundation or justification for much of the pervasive persecution and abuse of women throughout the world." And in the article where all this appeared, the writer says, it's refreshing to see Carter calling out the role of religion in the mistreatment of women. Yeah, you show me a religion that doesn't subjugate, denigrate, or mistreat women, and I'll show you a religion that is a religion of indigenous people, in the anthropological sense that that term is used, or one of the more, well, Wicca is one that doesn't denigrate or prostitute women. Anyway, the writer says, the question for Carter and for others who find themselves at odds with leadership is when a group you're deeply involved in starts to move away from your own core beliefs, do you stay and try to change from within, or at some point do you have to look for the exit? And there's more here. But that question also applies to a lot of us who consider ourselves, have always considered ourselves to be Americans, who believed in the ultimate righteousness of this country and who have realized over the past 30 or 40 years when we've gotten political awareness, when we realize what our government has done, government under Democrats, Republicans, doesn't matter, when we realize the atrocities that have been committed globally, supposedly in our name, as we committed murder and acts, criminal acts that go on beyond description, and then those acts were fed to the American public as necessary to protect freedom and democracy, which is one of the biggest filthy lies ever put out there. So do you, a lot of people are considering what Carter considered, not about religion, but about staying in this country. If you come to realize that not so much the country has moved away from what you thought it was, but what you thought was always a lie to begin with. So what do? You stay here and try to change it, which is, I think at this point, is, if not impossible, improbable. Or do you say, look, I still have the freedom to leave, and I'm going to. What do? All right, I know you're on hold. We'll get to your calls when we come back. Cat Mary writes, in Terry Pratchett's book, Small Gods, the following. The more believers a God has, the more powerful a form that God can have. But now the great God Om is inconvenienced by lack of believers and is reduced to being a turtle. Nevertheless, he manages to make contact with a devout believer, a novice monk who tends the monastery garden. Through various plot devices, the high priest, Vorbis, finds the turtle, Om, munching lettuce in the garden. Vorbis turns the turtle over on its back and puts it in the sun, deciding to come back many hours later to see how its agonizing death has progressed. Pat Robertson has that kind of mind. Most fundamentalists do. When the great god Om finally resumes his powerful shape, he decrees many laws. One is to grow more lettuce, and the other is to be kind to all turtles. Captain Mary in Memphis, who prefers to believe in Anuia, the goddess of stuck drawers. Her altar generally features an egg beater or spatula. Is it the god Om or is it the god Om? I mean, I know. Never mind. Jesus, I don't want to know. All right, we'll be back momentarily. Captain Mary, the goddess who? No, wait a minute here. The goddess Anuia, the goddess of stuck drawers. Her altar generally features an egg beater or a spatula.
With Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. I'm coming to your phone calls in a minute. And I've got a couple of really good pieces from Prairie 2 that we're not going to get to tonight. Sorry, Bruce. We'll do it tomorrow night, though, I swear. Very quickly here, Dave in Miami writes, the right castigates Carter because he was the last president to have a balanced budget, with the possible exception of Clinton's last year. That truth sheds light on the fact that Reagan exploded the debt and he threw fiscal responsibility out the window, a fact that right-wingers will never admit. Carter also has written dozens of books, another fact that makes conservative heads bobble. And, of course, Carter called out Israel on their abusive treatment of Palestinians. Yeah, he also was one of the original supporters, although I don't think he founded it, of the Habitat for Humanity. That has done so much good for so many people where it concerns having a place to live, for God's sake. And then very quickly, from Tom regarding PET scans in Jesus. Mike, neuroscience has proven over and over and over that the right-wing brain works differently from the liberal brain. PET scans and electroencephalographs show that right-wingers are unable to handle ambiguity and conflict. They do not have the wiring. Their frontal cortex is not functional. It is not genetic. It is purely developmental, a binding that deteriorates their human potential. Incidentally, the dumber they are, the more religious they are. Right-wingers are simply developmentally handicapped, who must rely on violence, not language, because that's all they have. That's a fact of life. So now what? They outnumber us and they vote. You'd think that mobilizing the left would be enough to overcome the odds and gain some real uncompromising political power, enough to wrest our future from the hands of all the global warming deniers, the people haters, the fear mongers, wife beaters, and chicken hawks. But how? The right wingers are killers. And the apathetics are self-hypnotized into the ranks of the living dead. When a total of 70% of our electorate are brain dead, isn't it pretty much over? A done deal? What's left? Here in California, the only growth industry is private prisons, and the best paid people are prison guards. When laws are passed making liberals a crime against the state, well, it just gets too weird to contemplate. And the fact that we as a nation have devolved to this degree is in most respects surely a sign of our defeat. I don't know, and I know you don't either, but according to the Gospel of Mary, written during 1 AD and unearthed in the 1980s, Jesus the teacher said that the New Testament is the following. that there is no God, only good. Try that out. Tom and Joshua Tree. Yeah, the Gospels, you know, the hidden gospel, the gospels that the Christian church decided to eliminate because they were too, Gnostic gospels, thank you, because they were too real, too anti what the established church was trying to establish. By real, I don't mean that they laid out the divinity of Jesus or the existence of a God. I just mean they were too real in their approach to what this Jewish teacher was trying to tell people 2,000 years ago. It was just too much for the church. The church, so-called, the church had other plans. This was a way to command unbreakable authority. This was the best thing that anybody ever come up with. Oh, my God, look at this. Look what we've got here. So the suppression of those parts of the writings of people who knew this historical figure, who knew what what the objective was, all of that had to be destroyed or suppressed. It wasn't completely destroyed, but suppressed, so that when the canon of the church was written, it would be so repressive, so screwed up, so filled with exclusivity, that it was capable of producing the Holocaust. It was capable of producing the Crusades. And to this day, it is capable of producing support for the invasion and slaughter in Muslim countries. Now, that's some powerful crap, ladies and gentlemen. And that's one of the reasons the Gnostic Gospels were suppressed. There you go. Wasn't that easy? All right. Chuck is in Knoxville. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
All right. How are you?
All right. I wanted to offer a one man's opinion as to what the next 10 years look like.
Oh, Lord. Go ahead.
But first, I wanted to say something about the immigration situation. You were saying that both parties don't want to get rid of them because they're cheap labor. They're also going to be the largest voting bloc in another 20 years. It would be political suicide for either party to throw them out. And I personally think the Republicans are pushing this thing through Arizona to force Obama's hand. If the Mexicans were to blame anybody, they'd blame the state of Arizona, not the Republican National Convention.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But anyway, getting on to the 10-year prediction, I think we're headed towards a period similar to what the French Revolution went through with several different movements over a period, or what Russia went through with the Bloody Revolution, that mm-hmm. period.
Right.
I think the Republicans are going to gain a lot of seats in both houses this cycle. Then the next cycle, I think they're going to gain more because they own the airways and because of what the Supreme Court has done to us. And I think they're going to keep Obama to use him as a scapegoat. They're getting what they want from him anyway. Why would they change him? And then when they get power, they're going to do all kinds of nice, wonderful things like get rid of Social Security and maybe rescind the minimum wage law and all kinds of wonderful little things. And there'll be a revolution. I don't think there'll be a civil war because I don't think Democrats as a whole are as violent as Republicans. I don't think they'll get into a civil war with Republicans, and I think Republicans will basically get their way for the next 10 years, and they'll go through one usurper after another in a vacuum.
Well, that's pretty bleak, but you may not be too far off. The only thing that I would add as a codicil to that, and let me put you on hold, Chuck. There's some road noise coming in. What I would add to that would be that there are enough people, I think, in this country who don't consider themselves to be Democrats or members of any political party, who just consider themselves to be human beings who by birth happen to wind up here on Turtle Island. And because, you know, we just happen to wind up here, we've developed an affection for, you know, the country, the physical thing that is the United States. And we've also developed, those of us who are not Democrat or not, you know, nailed to a certain ideology, we've also developed an affection for the ideas that surrounded the framers where it concerns self-governance, even though we recognize that they were, in their time, they would have been considered fascist, too. I mean, they denied the humanity of people that were here, and they denied the ability of other people who were here to govern themselves, and they denied life to the people who were here to begin with. I mean, it's pretty crappy beginning. But their documents transcended them. And, you know, I've come to believe that in my life, that the documents that they wrote were far better than the people who wrote them. And that's what I've developed an affection for. Not this faux patriotism that you get with halfwits and monsters like Beck and Limbaugh and the rest of these people. So all that to say that I think that if there are enough of us, and we'll probably all be made dead eventually, but there are enough of us in this country who would not just quietly and in a subservient, head down, tail between our legs manner, let these son of a bitches succeed without really, really leaving a mark. Now, I don't, and the mark would be blood. I mean, just all over the place. I don't mean that the little cadre, little in a relative sense, of revolutionaries would succeed. No. But that cadre of revolutionaries, I think, would cause an awful lot of damage before they were annihilated. And that damage would be the part that would at some point enter into the history books so that later generations, maybe somewhere beyond your 10 years, beyond maybe 100 years, there would be the inspiration to try to get to the point that the framers were talking about and writing about 230 years ago. I know that doesn't make any sense, but what the hell. Chuck, thanks. I appreciate it. We'll be right back. Minnesota, that's the name of your town?
You got it.
Little Canada, Minnesota. Well, welcome to the program, David.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Sure.
You know, I wanted to mention something about Jimmy Carter.
Sure.
See, he's kind of an enigma in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, you do like him because he is a decent human being. I agree with you on that. And if you remember, and I'm sure you do, he ran on a platform to cut military spending.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last 2 years of his administration, he actually increased military spending because, of course, the powers that be that really pick the president, let's be honest, we don't actually really have a say in that. The powers that be that really choose the president told him to start spending on military, which kind of laid the groundwork for Reagan to come through and look like a hero. On top of that, I know you know what happened with the Zbigniew Brzezinski in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, that started with Jimmy Carter, you know?
Right.
As much as I like him personally, I can't absolve him of that at all. But coming on his good side, you know, him being a Southern Baptist and all, and leaving that congregation, he was one of the few people who actually came out and defended the president when Jeremiah Wright said what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people, and I have yet to hear one right-winger, because I have a lot of right-wing friends, I have yet to hear one of them coherently tell me what was factually incorrect about what Jeremiah Wright said.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually what Jimmy Carter said. He goes, what is it that he said that was actually wrong?
Right, right.
And of course, he was coming from a racial standpoint. He's saying that blacks have a right to say this. I'm coming from a more political standpoint of, well, a political and biblical standpoint of, you know, God has damned nations that have done terrible things. If our government has done terrible things in our name, which we don't know about, for the most part, a lot of people don't, isn't he going to do what he does? I mean, these people didn't really care when Jerry Falwell said the ACLU, gays, and lesbians were at fault for 9/11. But here comes Jeremiah Wright talking about, look at what we did in the Philippines, look what we did here, look at this, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God damned us, or God damned America, and all of a sudden we all have a heart attack. Carter did step in and say that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really sure exactly what to think about the guy overall, because he has a lot of dirt underneath his fingernails, but at the same time, he's a fairly personal individual.
Well, you know, the only answer I would have, David, I've said before that I've had several conversations with Carter, some of them for broadcast and some of them in those moments between segments where you just sit and kind of talk with somebody. And I've never had a problem accepting him as genuine and forthright. But I think Carter, like a lot of us, or like all of us, if we're going to continue to grow, your ideas change. I think the mark of a right-winger is this kind of iconoclastic attitude that, well, this is what I was taught, and nothing's going to change it. Now, that doesn't take into consideration that what these people were taught was horse hockey. But and they're incapable, as Tom pointed out, some of these people are incapable of dealing with nuance or ambiguity or what have you. And I think Carter developed, and I'm not trying to be patronizing here, you know, he's Jimmy Carter. I'm just a 25-cent talk show host. So I'm not the least trying to be patronizing or act like I know more about Carter. I don't. I know nothing about him except the little tiny bits that I've picked up from reading his books, watching his activities since he was president, and watching what he and Rosalind do. Between the two of them, I mean, they're a two-person force for decency. Their religious beliefs to the contrary notwithstanding. So I tend to agree that Carter is probably a difficult figure. He is a difficult figure to pigeonhole. You just can't do it. I think Carter was probably the last president who tried to be honest that this country has experienced. I really do. But I think Carter had to go because he was not a corporatist. I think his religious teachings prevented him from being a corporatist. And corporatism was the direction this country started heading back in the days of Teddy Roosevelt, that Philippine War you were referencing. So, yeah, Carter is kind of an enigma, I guess. But I think basically he was a decent person. Thanks a lot, David. I appreciate your insight. James is in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, James.
Mike, hey, I want to say this, Mike, to white America,
right,
the racist elements of white America, and the quiet elements of white America. Go back and know your history. Know how you have been manipulated and controlled by this government from a colonial perspective to a modern-day corporatist perspective. Now, I want to say the indentured servants of the colonial period, how they were made to believe that they were different from the black slaves or the slaves of people of color, so that they felt that they had a shot at prosperity. It's all been played out today. And I also want to say, do you really think that President Obama was elected? Is it a coincidence that all of a sudden now that we went from a false war in Iraq, from weapons of mass destruction? Are you believing your own lies? Have you lived a lie so long till you start to believe them?
James, I have to interrupt because we're just flat out of time. But the big lie, that is a tried and tested and workable political reality. It was part of the German high command. Who was it? Himmler or Goebbels or somebody who said, go for the big lie. The bigger the lie, the more, and the more often you repeat it, the more people will come to believe it. But I get what you're saying, James. I do. I got to go. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care, y'all. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.